Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Never Strays Far is proud to be supported by BICMO Cycle Insurance, protecting the world's riders and the places we ride. Head to BICMO.com and use the code NSF24 on their quote page to get 12 months of award-winning BICMO insurance for the price of 11. Terms apply.
Well, a marked change of scene. It was quite a long transfer out of Europa last night, which is why the podcasting got a little bit ragged, if I'm perfectly honest. Long drive. Staggeringly, we're still in Piemonte, though. The race has been in the region of Piemonte ever since it started, and today's stage is all in Piemonte. In fact, tomorrow it starts in Piemonte and then finishes in Liguria, which is the next region that we'll cross into in our expanding journey through Italy. Sunshine of yesterday and the opening weekend has gone. The clouds have rolled in just as predicted, and you might be able to hear in the distance the patter of light drops of rain falling on the canopies of some umbrellas, whatever you call them, cafe umbrella, big cafe umbrella things, just out in the open. I'm actually in a courtyard looking at the only church in Narzole where we stayed last night, which is about 20 kilometres short of where the stage finishes today in Fossano. It's only a little place, Narzole, just perched on the top of a hill, quite close to Barolo. Big wine country, this, like quality wine country. And quite close to France, actually. And this part of Piemonte, I mean, this part of Italy, really, one of the historical acts that was scored into its history is, of course, Napoleon marching his troops through here in 1896. And in fact, Narzole, a bit like Dick Turpin back home in the UK, Napoleon's sort of personal journey through this part of Italy is marked in lots of places. You'll often see Napoleon pass through here. Narzole is no different. Apparently, on the 24th of April, in Narzole, he spent the night here, and he had dinner, just like we did, for one night in Narzole in 1896. The occupation was short-lived. I think it was only 6 years before occupied by the French, was liberated. Sorry, I'm just going to have a sip of cappuccino. I'll take the microphone away from my mouth, though. And, but during the brief French occupation, there were a band of brigands, organised criminals, really, kind of mafiosi, who operated in Narzole. They were called I Fratelli di Narzole, the Narzole Brothers, the Brotherhood. And they were just loose bad guys, really, just kind of extortion racketeers and stuff. But they became politically quite useful because they became the de facto opposition, and they're kind of sabotaging the French occupying troops and basically making life difficult for the occupiers. And what's quite interesting is that they actually drew their funding. They were funded by the British, who were ploughing money to make life difficult for Napoleon and the French. Also in 1896, Timoteo, as he would go on to become known, Timoteo Giaccardo, was born, probably Nazzoli's most famous son. Obviously, I'd not heard of him, but a modicum of research, because actually I'm standing outside the church, or I'm sitting outside the church, and his image hangs in great big banners on three sides of the church. Timoteo, Beato Timoteo Giaccardo. So Beato is the beatified one. I don't know what the English translation of that is. It's kind of, I think it's one step short of canonization, so it's one step short of sainthood. Anyway, Timoteo was born in 1896. He was a very sickly child. He nearly died at 6 months, but his mother prayed to the Virgin Mary and she interceded on his behalf and saved his life. And so he was set, his course was set really in a spiritual life, and he trained to become a priest in the seminary, and I think he was one of the youngest priests ever to have been ordained. They rushed his his priesthood through because his mother was dying. She died very young. He actually then went to Rome and became a very important figure in the Catholic Church, and an advisor and a confidant of various different popes. He died relatively young as well, in his early 50s, of leukemia in 1947. And in 1955, the process of his beatification began through all the various different complicated procedural bits and pieces and votes and evidence that has to be the Vatican has to produce in to stack up his case for beatification. And that was finally granted in May 1989, 13th of May, by Pope John Paul II. Beatified Timoteo Giocardo. But his case is still current in the Vatican, and it is with a Spanish postulator, and whose name I can't remember. The postulator, it's his responsibility to determine whether or not Timoteo will eventually become canonized, will become a saint. But I think for evidence for that next step in his posthumous career, I think they have to produce evidence of substantial miracles. Anyways, his name is everywhere in Nazzoli. There are streets named after him, and yeah, his image is on the church, and actually in the church itself, there's a funeral ongoing for what I think is a very important person from Nazzoli. I saw the coffin being unloaded and taken into the church, and every now and again I can hear the hymns being sung and prayers being said in the church, and the hearse is parked outside now with the tailgate open, and yeah, I think the won't be too long before the coffin emerges from the church. Stage 366 kilometres. opening the road book, the Garibaldi. Novara, been there a few times with its enormous cathedral, the Basilica, the Duomo, that I think I'm right in saying was designed by the same architect who built the Mole Tower in Turin, the famous landmark. It's a disproportionately vast though, Novara. Surrounded by paddy fields. Just reading the road book. Founded in ancient times, Novara is an elegant 18th century city with a beautiful historical centre. That's where the race gets underway today. And it finishes in Fossano, which is, if you're interested in foodie things, hand-minced Fossano beef. Fossano beef. Fasona beef. What? I think that's a misprint. Fossano beef. Hand-minced Fossano beef, panettone, chocolate confections, corn flour cookies called chiacchiere di meliga, and brut e bun, which are hazelnut meringue cookies. Anyway, I'm sort of clutching slightly. This is more wine country than food country. Well, it's a bit of both, actually, but slightly cut short straws because it's the first day for a sprint, Matt, isn't it? Have you highlighted your sprinty types in your start list?
I haven't yet. I'm going to do that in the next half an hour. And I want to get the start sheet. I did do that on day one. And we have a lot. There's a lot of green actually. Just flicking back to the first stage, which wasn't a sprint, of course.
Say some names out loud.
Okay, we've got a lot. So just I'm going to take a deep breath.
This will be proper cycling content. This will be good
because we have and we've talked about it a lot on commentary. And I'm kind of glad we got to the first sprint stage because I think out of all the years I've been commentating on this particular bike race, this is the best sprinter's field. So, without further ado, Alpecin de Koenig, Caden Groves. Okay, class. Slight outsider, Yanthi Berman from Arkea B&B. Max Cantor, Arkea. Not Arkea, Astana, sorry. Danny Van Poppel is going well. We're like today with its rolling parkour at the end. Danny Van Poppel's going well. We've also got Lawrence Pithy. He will like today in the blue of Groupama.
That's a good shout.
Benjamin Gramai, I think he'll like today as well, easily get over those climbs at the ends. Ethan Vernon, another interesting pick from Israel. I mean, Jonathan Milan, Simone Consoni, two options there, although I think it'll be Milan today.
That's Lidl Trek sprint offering.
Indeed. Fernando Gaviria.
Won't be winning.
Tim Merlier or Luke Lamperty. definitely too
Luke Lampetti. Yeah, so it might be a bit too hard for Malia, and it might be an opportunity for the Lamps.
Definitely. Then we've got Andreasen and Jakobsen.
Definitely Anderson for me.
From Team DSM Firmenich.
Definitely.
Yep. Caleb Ewan.
Yeah.
I mean.
Dale McEwen.
I've still got a few more.
Yeah.
Olive Coy, but.
Yeah. Got bashed up yesterday, didn't he?
Got bashed up. And that is a bit of a dig with about 2K to go. Proper little dig. Yeah. Alberto Dainese from Tudor Pro Cycling.
Or. Matteo Trentin.
Or Trentin. Mm. As a long shot. You'd have to go clear, I think. And then Phil Bauhaus.
I've literally forgotten about Bauhaus.
Yeah. And Filippo Fiorelli potentially in the Maglia Ciclamino now. So, I mean, that took about 2 minutes to read through all the sprinters. There's a lot of sprint talent. So it's going to be quite congested, I think, at the back end. But we have a classic, almost as you put it, almost a Tour de France style boulevard finish, about 1,200 metres long.
Giro di Francia. But before that, with about 2.5k to go at Top Sound, you've got a proper little climb to get up to this hilltop town, haven't we? Sort of like, it'll shell a few of them out. So yeah. I think Jakobsen, Coy, maybe Kanter, I don't know how well he climbs. There'll be a few of them who might just get distance there and out of contention, just out of position, really, rather than dropped.
Yeah, it's about a kilometre and a half long, isn't it? But it's very wide and very fast. And sometimes you look at these little climbs and you think, blimey, they're going to get shelled here. But just the speed, I think, they're going to be able to carry up the first. If they start near the front, which they will.
But not all of them can be at the front. That's the thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
So, yeah, being out of position when you know, that might be the difference between success and failure here. And that climb might determine that outcome.
Yeah, it's all about teammates there as well, because the run-in, the climbs themselves are wide. The run-in to that, there's a pinch point, a real hard left-hander.
1.5K?
1.5, well, yeah, 1,300 metres to go, where they swing left.
It's a hairpin, isn't it? It's a dead turn.
It is essentially, but before that, because of the amount of sprinters that are here, and assuming, let's say, 75% of them survive, there'll be a lot of movement around the outside. It's actually going to be quite a nervy finish with so many sprinters here. Although there's quite a few opportunities, the Giro always throw in something a little bit different at the end just to make it a bit spicy. But I think this could be quite sketchy. I don't think there's anything dangerous about the route at all. I just think the amount of sprint teams here, with the amount of pressure that's on them to deliver, will mean that there's going to be a lot of movement, and you're really going to be relying on teammates. And there will be a lot of riders with very good legs today that won't win purely because they're out of position.
You did a bit of kind of commentary warm-up just as we were driving to the line, didn't you? And you kind of you hypothesised an imaginary situation in which Domenico Pozzoviva attacked late on and held off the chase to take stage three. And you shouted in the car, Pozzoviva!
I did, but not before he crashed with 9 kilometres to go and miraculously got on. That was the full story that you didn't mention. But yeah, he crashed on the descent, a quite twisting descent. He laid it down on a hairpin.
Yep.
Incredibly, 2 days running, his rear mech came off again,
yes.
Spare bike, and it was Fiorelli. I couldn't believe it. Fiorelli dropped back. I mean, it's a romantic ride from Fiorelli. And he ended up could end up taking sixth. Getting my tenses wrong here. Towed him back. And of course,
you got muddled because this is a thing that's happened, but yet hasn't happened and won't happen.
Exactly.
So I don't know what tense that is.
No. Yeah. So you'll be listening to this after knowing the result as well. It's even weirder.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I quite like little commentary warm-ups, but I just didn't like the way that Pozzoviva was absolutely flying. And we said that he might have actually ridden this race so far one of the quickest because he had to chase on that many times.
That's so true. Anyway, we were at a lovely cafe. We've had a cappuccino. Matt's had to go back to the park car to get his Garibaldi, which he likes to cut up and stick into his little notebook. He's done that now. He got lost going back to the car, even though he dropped a pin to say exactly where the car was. So it's one of those days. It's got the potential to go quite badly wrong for us today, but we'll just have to see. Pozzoviva!
Ciao, ciao, bambina. Un bacio ancora.
Welcome once again from the hilltops of Turin and Oropa to the flatlands of Piemonte. The race now changes shape for the next three stages as the best sprinters field in recent memory at the Giro takes centre stage. Today, the fast men get their reward for battling their way through, quite frankly, the hardest opening weekend of racing for decades.
Cos'è che trema sul tuo visino?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What a stage that wasn't for 60 kilometres or something. Yeah, we were kind of like scrabbling around trying to think of similar stages where no one had attacked. And I remembered in 2018, Johan Ofrido on the road, the long road to Chartres. It was about 230 kilometres long that day, and he was the only person who attacked, and he attacked only reluctantly after about 80 kilometres of them rolling along. I think that's what happened anyway that day.
It's so, almost like the collective responsibility of the whole peloton went on the shoulders of one person. But yeah, today was. I'm still trying to kind of process how odd it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant, but in equal measure, you know, very, very dull. And then in equal measure, strange. There was it went through so many different phases.
Yeah.
That caught a lot of people off the hop.
Off the hop.
Yeah. What you got to bear in mind is I'm driving. It's quite a narrow, twisty bit. So
your grammar's slipping.
Yeah, my grammar's slipping.
Yeah, off the hop isn't really.
So no, I mean, but I've never used it before. Oh, it's off the hop. So yeah. On the hoof.
Caught us off guard.
Off guard.
Off the hop.
Off the hop.
Doesn't make sense.
No.
I quite like that.
On the hop. It caught us hopping. Wait, I don't know.
But it was good in the end, wasn't it? It was really good. I enjoyed Lilian Galmjan's attack for the first. King of the Mountain, the only King of the Mountains points, and the absolute insanity of Davide Ballerini's little move going with him.
What was Ballerini doing?
He has no idea. Ballerini had no idea.
He just sort of followed him and thought, I would see what happens here. And then they ended up clear. And then they ended up talking about, and Ballerini was saying, well, are you going for the points? He said, no, I'm just going for the KOMs. And Ballerini was like, And then Carmichael went for the, got the points.
Sat up.
Did the right thing, dropped back. And then Ballerini just kept on riding.
Just a little bit.
Ever so slightly. More quicker than Calmejean, but not. And he, as you said, I've never heard the phrase before. He was trying to go easy. It's
like trying to get caught.
Yeah, trying to get
and
caught.
Trying and failing to get caught.
No, he was very bad at getting caught.
Caught. Yeah, he was kind of like doing really expansive Moto TV gestures of like, oh, I've sacked this off. I'm blowing my nose. I'm looking around. I'm fiddling with my cuffs, reorganising them. I keep looking around. I've basically sat up. That was the kind of like visual cues that he was giving us. And yet it was all to no avail because the bunch were just holding it back. However slow he went, they went slower. And then, there was proper peloton banter when he got caught, wasn't there? Yeah. They all had a little laugh at his expense.
Hold on, until Trentin came back. So, do you want to go again, mate? You know, obviously in Italian because they're both
japes.
Italian.
It was japes.
Lots of smile, lots of banter. Then lots more slow riding before the first intermediate sprint, which... kicked things off royally, didn't it? Because the intermediate sprint, the Malia Ciclamino sprint, was on a very short climb, and about 20 riders went clear. And
is that you stifling a bit of a burp?
No, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't a burp.
Right.
It was something strange.
So was it halfway between a stifled burp and a yawn?
No, it was a burp. It's just come out. The burp just came out. Then directions to Hotel Moresco. That's where we're going. Start 55 minutes. We're heading. Basically, we're doing a kind of Milan San Remo-y route to our hotel today, aren't we?
Very. We're up in the hills, aren't we? The kind of range of hills, the very northern extent of the Apennines, the Passo del Torchino, but we're a little bit north of that, aren't we?
Yes.
Dropping down to Savona, and then to our hotel in Andorra on the Ligurian, as you say, on the Ligurian coast. So then it was all brilliant after that, wasn't it? Tadej Pogacar was hilarious.
It was hilariously brilliant, wasn't he?
Thomas was very good.
Geraint Thomas was great.
You nailed the identification of Mikel Honoré, which was very good.
Yeah, I
mean, he's quite a generic rider.
Yeah, he's a generic looking rider. If it's a few of those guys, I mean, there's about three that from a distance could look similar, but then I thought, well, it's the type of effort that you might make. And his name never came up on the screen, but anyway, it was him. But then I think one of the rides of the day, which gives us another, just underlines how good Geraint Thomas is going. He's absolutely flying. He couldn't quite match that super fast acceleration, but he did his own thing. It took him pretty much the rest of the climb to get on, and even a little bit over the top, he was just centimetre by centimetre going slightly quicker, got into the slipstream of Pogacar.
And stayed there.
And then, but it did give him a turn.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. He gave him a turn.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, he did. He gave him a turn.
Did he?
He did.
Okay.
And then he gave him a turn with about just went through the Framrouge, gave him a turn.
Yeah.
Then Pogacar come through. I think he half sat up, and then Pogacar somehow found something to accelerate again on the left. But then I think at that point Thomas knew that it was all over, and then we got the kind of this chaotic sprint that, with all the best sprinters of the world just kind of doing their own thing. It was spectacularly entertaining finale. It really, really was after an incredibly dull start. I don't think I've ever seen a stage, as you just said, mate, of such contrast. And we had an average speed at one point after the first 2 hours of 37k an hour, which led us to going through the list of riders in the race that had names that were nominatively determinative.
I really got into that.
That goes back.
So I was on Fighting Talk on BBC Five Live a couple of weeks ago, and one of the questions was Max. I've only done the show twice. They, out of the kindness of their hearts, they chuck in a couple of cycling questions that would never normally be in their kind of like radar at all. But they, one of the questions was, German sprinter Max Kanter just won a stage at the Tour of Turkey. What other sports people can you think of whose names exhibit nominative determinism? Which is very hard to say, isn't it? Yeah. And my answer was three golfers. This is absolutely true. They were paired together in the final round of a tournament in Kentucky, I think, around about 7 years ago, and they were called, I can't remember their first names, but they were called Shank, Hack, and Yip, which I think is quite funny. But one of the other contestants on the panel show said Usain Bolt, which kind of won the round, really. So it's very good.
I'm sure.
We started looking down the start list of the Giro to see if anyone had another, apart from Kanter, nominative deterministic name, and we found a few. We fabricated a few, didn't we?
There was maybe one or two that were okay. Patrick Gamper, I said his parents were keen campers. It wasn't great.
I thought you were reaching a bit of that, and I wondered whether you're going glamper, because there's glamping as well, and camping. So it falls in, but also it's not. You'd have to know that Patrick Gamper was big on his camping, his glamorous camping, for that to work. Yeah. And I don't think either of us know him well enough as a Bora Hansgrohe rider.
No, we'd be assuming a lot.
But
one thing I did, picked a rider from. That wasn't in the field that has ridden the Giro before. Was it Winner Annacona?
Yeah,
which was. I think that was actually quite good
because he has won a race.
He's won a race.
Won a couple of races actually.
There's a few. But we got about 7 minutes out of that, didn't we?
Yeah, we also came up. You came up with an ironically nominative deterministic name that's actually kind of runs counter to who he is, Adrien Petit, because he's actually quite big.
That's it. We did the opposites, didn't we?
Yeah, James Piccolo. Which is the same, Piccolo and Petit are the same word, but in different languages.
And he's actually got that, but
that works because he's quite small.
Yeah, and he's a big fan of woodwind as well, and potentially he's a big fan of flutes. Potentially, though, we don't know that.
You keep hypothesising these hobbies.
I think for the viewers at home, in all the places we can territory to go to, I think they thoroughly enjoyed that. We had no feedback whatsoever, but I think they did.
That got us through a couple of kilometres. We had another long discussion. This is when nothing was happening in the bike race. It got really exciting, literally. Then we had I quite enjoyed our chat about sprinters on the same team who've fallen out with each other. And we listed three examples. Yeah. One was, I can't remember. Elia Viviani and Jacopo Moretzko racing the Tour de San Juan for the Italian national team.
Laporte and the boxing bloke who's...
Buani.
Buani, which I commentated on the race. And then you had another one.
We had three examples.
Oh, Jakobsen and Seneschal.
That's it. From the Vuelta a few years ago.
Vuelta who fell out. And again, that board's another 4.5 minutes, I think, roughly,
then,
from memory.
And then we said, can we think of any others? And you said, well, I'm sure that must have happened at the Tour Series. And then we both speculated that Rob Hales would have been involved.
I was going to say, though? Gibby.
Oh!
I didn't want to say Gibby on air in case, because I know he listens to the World Feed. He tunes in. He's got this weird, I know he made it. It's like you know that you make computers with this cooling systems, and he's made one to pick up the World Feed. So I didn't want to upset him.
Yeah, well, he's very conscious. I mean, I know he's made. I'm aware that he's made that machine that picks up the World Feed. He's He's knocked it together, hasn't he? Out of
cost him a few quid, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, fair play to him, because I didn't realise he was such an engineer at heart. Yeah. But he's a real purist when it comes to stuff like that.
Those of you don't know, it's Tony Gibb, isn't it?
Tony Gibb,
former sprinter for Marshall's Past. No, Plowman Craven.
Plowman Craven.
Raced the Tour Series and raced the Tour of Britain, didn't he? I mean,
yeah.
That day, you remember that day?
Oh,
Gibb was involved in.
Well, that day, and this, was kind of set the scene, wasn't it? I mean, there was the It was a Tour of Britain.
Before it even got underway, wasn't it? It was over breakfast when it all...
There was an issue over the photo finish machine. And previously, Gibby...
From the previous day. Unfortunately, this controversy ran into the breakfast table the following day, didn't it?
What happened was, Gibby was sure, as eggs are eggs, that he'd got 13th.
Seventh. Oh, was it?
Was it 13th? He's top 15 on the stage. I was 13th, and they'd given him 16th.
And it was quite important, that, because it would have bumped him up in the points classification I think 12th to 11th.
Outside the top 10
yeah.
In the points classification. So fair, and actually, when you think about it, Ned, it's like fair play to him. If he's got... So basically...
He storms into where Carol is working, doesn't she?
And Carol, bless her, she does a lot of jobs, but she also calibrates the finish line machine with another bloke. Who's
Colin?
Is it Colin?
I think it might be, but yeah, I think Colin. There's quite a lot of Colins at the Tour of Britain.
And he goes in there. I mean, bless her. Carol doesn't even go down to breakfast. She basically has a croissant and some scrambled egg on a plate in a room where she's doing her work. I mean, she's doubling up.
This is the whole Day in Express and crew, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And we saw it, mate, and it was disappointing. But he steams in and just starts laying into Carol verbally. And it was no physical.
I know. And then you think he's going to leave it, and then he spots. Right in the corner, he spots Tim Harris, who's turning over chairs to see who's manufactured them, because he wants the contract to supply the Holiday Inn Express with chairs and crew. And he strides over and he grabs this upturned hotel breakfast chair and threatens Carol at this point. And that's the exact moment that Mick Bennett tries to break him up, doesn't he? So Carol and Gibby, and unfortunately gets a black eye. I think it was accidental, but Gibby was all over the place, wasn't he, really?
And it was more of a struggle, wasn't it? I don't think Gibby struck Bennett with the chair.
Bennett.
But it was more of a struggle, and the kind of the soft edge that's kind of padded with like fake leather went straight into to Bennett's eye socket and did cause quite a significant injury, which Carol, bless her, actually tended to at the scene, being a qualified first aider.
Yeah, as far as I can recollect it, that's exactly what happened. That said, I can't remember an incident involving Gibby and a teammate, so technically didn't fall into that bit of the discussion, so that's why we didn't talk about that on air today. And so that's why Gibby wouldn't have picked it up on the World Feed commentary when he was listening. It's an amazing machine that he's built, isn't it?
No, I mean, fair play to the lad. He knows what he's doing.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.